my name is Lorraine, and this is my show, Everyday Heroes. This show is about those who may not get the everyday recognition of how important of what it is they do every day to make our world a better place, and what they do to give and the world. Today, my guest is Becky Hill, MFT, marriage family therapist. She currently works in the foster care system. However, she has also worked with convicted criminals, addiction, and the list goes on. Hi, Becky. Thanks for being on our show.
Thank you for having me.
And I should actually say that you are an MFT intern, currently working on your hours, and this is what has brought you to working in so many adverse areas.
Absolutely.
Okay. So, again, thank you. I've been looking forward to talking with you, and I wanted to start out the show seeing if you could walk us through a typical day of yours, kind of give us a visual of what that looks like.
Okay, right now I work, it's a nonprofit organization that has kids in DCFS, foster care, probation. The majority of our kids have been taken out of their homes for various reasons. So a typical day for me is anywhere from 4 to 8 clients a day. And what I do is either individual therapy, family therapy is needed, and really just work on the kids with their goals. So depending on their diagnosis, we have kids with ADHD, PTSD, depression, anxiety, and just personally what I try to do is give them the coping skills to be able to help them decrease whatever negative aspect is in their life.
I see.
There's no typical day.
Okay, right.
There's some days that I go in and, you know, it's just like super fun, happy, the kids are doing great, see progress. There's, you know, you walk in a session, you never know. There's sometimes someone could open up about being molested or watching their parents get taken away. So there's really not a typical day.
Wow.
But it keeps me on my toes. And
I was just going to say, yeah, how do you prepare for what you're going into? Or is that really ever something that you can prepare for?
You can't. Well, I haven't figured out how to prepare for it, but I've had a lot of teachers when I was in school kind of give me tidbits, and one that really works, and it sounds silly, but I do it every day, is you pretend that you have this pretend briefcase, and at the end of the day, you drop it before you get into your car. Kind of just to leave work at work, which is hard, because I think every therapist thinks about their clients when they aren't with them. Because you do, you build relationships with people, so it's hard to just not, you know, turn that off, but I try to just do deep breathing myself.
Good for you. Meditation, yoga, any kinds of those things.
All of those.
Right. What are the ages that you pretty much see right now? I know you have had, like, I don't know, would they be called residencies, or you've had different?
I worked at an inpatient drug and alcohol rehab for convicted felons.
Right.
That had to be 18 or over, and rehabs actually stop at, I believe it's 61 or 63.
Oh, interesting.
So the youngest client I had was 18. The oldest client was 57.
Okay.
And my job now, most of them are about 4 or 5 to about 13.
Wow. So like complete opposite ends of the spectrum.
Completely different.
Wow.
But that's what it is when you're getting licensed. I kind of did that on purpose. A lot of people will stick with the same position. I really want to get a broad spectrum so that when I do get licensed, I have all of that as experience.
Right, right. So from the people that you've seen, are they typically, how do they respond the first time they're going to therapy? I know you know, you hear different stories of people being a little bit apprehensive or scared. Are people willingly wanting to go, or is this something they're like having to be ordered to do or forced to do? And how hard do they like resist, or how easy do they go with it?
And what do I think you- it really depends on the population. I know.
Okay.
Just in regular life, there's a stigmatism about going to a therapist. I have friends that kind of fight me on it as well.
Sure.
The kids that I work with, they pretty much don't know any different. They've been taken out of the home. Social workers, dealing with, you know, police coming in, all of that. So I think for them, therapy is a little bit easier. When I worked at the rehab, it took a good few sessions to even have the clients feel comfortable enough to open up, but I don't know if it's just my approach. I'm a really easygoing person.
Right.
I've had a lot of people just first session be fine. It really is just depends on the person, and I never try to push them.
Do you think
if someone isn't ready to talk, there's no reason to push them.
Right. Right. Like they'll come to you when...
Yeah, and the people that are kind of hesitant or scared of therapy, I completely understand that. When I first started going to my own therapy, I was scared.
Sure, yeah.
But, there's, you know, I always just tell the people, I say, this is your therapy, your boat, I'm just along for the ride.
Do you think...
So, however they take it.
Do you think there's a cush of time, like, that you see on average, like, is a magic... I don't want to say magic number, but, like... If you stick with it for 3 weeks or 3 months, like, there'll be something that happens. It will get easier. You'll fall in love with it. You'll still hate it as much as you did on day one. I mean, is there any, you know, like, number, amount of time, I should say, that if you kind of stick with it, you see a turn in people? Or is
I'm going to say it really depends on not the amount of time, but the amount of time it takes the person to realize that the therapist isn't judging them. They're literally there just to help them. And once they put their defense down and they're open, I think it happens like that.
That's a good way of putting it for sure. So I know I've heard...
It is. It's vulnerable for
sure,
a client, you know?
Sure. You're seeing a stranger for the first time. So I've heard a lot about inner child work, right? And how, and I'm not an expert at it at all. In fact, you'll probably have lots to enlighten me about. But does every adult, this is a question I've always just kind of had. Does every adult benefit from like going back and doing that inner child work? From what I understand, it is comforting that child, nurturing it. Is that something every adult benefits from, or is that something that like trauma, like, if you've had trauma as a child, then you'll benefit from that work later
everybody,
on in life? Or?
Everybody benefits from it, even if you had an amazing childhood.
That was my question. Okay, yeah.
Help the person kind of connect to who they are, what shaped them as a person.
Okay.
Like, the inner child's work isn't, years ago, just kind of a negative thing. Like, you know, mommy issues or this or that or the other. It's right. Really, the inner child work is, by age 3, your personality is already formed.
Wow.
Every single person. So it's really kind of just going back to then figuring out what makes that person the unique person that they are. So it's really a beautiful thing as opposed to kind of a creepy thing, I think.
I love that spin on it. That's great. And that seems like it has a bit of a resurgence, like you said, into like a positive place where maybe it doesn't seem so scary for people, you know, to go to and seem like it's, again, even having that self-judgment, like, oh, I got to do this work because I'm this, I'm that, like, you know, instead it's like, I want to do this because I can help myself, or I want to get to know myself better, more, whatever it is.
And the technical, like, psychological term, it really doesn't matter what it is, it's cognitive behavioral therapy. But as humans, we do it every day. So I always tell my clients, whether it was at the rehab, I used to literally like throw a quarter at the people and they would laugh at me, but there's two sides to every coin. So you can take, that's what cognitive therapy is. You basically, with a client, would take two triangles. Same concept. If you think, you know, a lot of people have one negative thing, like make it not personal. Okay, it's Monday. Oh, it's Monday. This sucks. I'm tired.
Right.
The whole week ahead of me, you're going to have a terrible Monday. Flip the coin. It's Monday. You have a whole new chance at a week. You're starting fresh. It's really the perspective that you have on things. Changes your mood, your attitude, your behaviors, everything.
Isn't that amazing, the power of our perspective, right? And why sometimes is it so hard for humans, yeah, to like realize that, right? I feel like with that kind of switch, so many things, domino effect, everything changes.
And it's, I mean, I even myself trained myself to do that. When I start seeing myself,
right?
They're called negative cognitions. When you start seeing yourself think or say something negative, I will stop myself and, you know, mentally flip that coin and change it. Because it does. It changes your whole perspective on life, relationship thing.
What a great coping tool, too.
That, it's a good one.
Yeah, exactly. Just for anybody to be, to try to really remember when they're in that place, you know?
Yeah.
That things can be different. Things can change on a dime. So what do you do for self-care for yourself? Because I know you can, this can be a pretty heavy position that you're in in life. And you hear all kinds of...
This actually really has been. The rehab, I think, was a lot easier emotionally on me. This with the kids, it is. It's rough, and everybody in this field practices self-care. You know, we remind each other as therapists. You kind of see someone down. Other clinicians talk to each other. That helps a lot. My personal favorite self-care is the hyperbaric chamber, but I can't do that all the time.
Can you tell us a little bit about that? What exactly that is? And if is that something that
I actually got
anyone could benefit from?
I got walked into that one. I didn't know what it was. I was hesitant. I have a friend that owns one, which... At that point, you know, you can't say no.
Right.
I did say no, actually, several times, and he kept telling me I needed to do it. But it was the most beautiful experience ever. It's like a chamber that you get into. All your senses are gone. You close your eyes, you open them. It doesn't matter. It's just as dark. There's no noise. There's no breeze. The water's just like a mild, warm temperature. And I did ask because the first time I went, I fell asleep and then was terrified I was going to drown.
Oh, my gosh.
But there's so much. I really was. And I guess I slept in there for like 2 hours.
Oh, my
gosh.
That's
there's so
awesome.
Much salt in the water that you can't flip over. But what it is you have your mind just is clear. You know, you don't hear anything. You can't see anything. You kind of just escape reality and... It floods your subconscious. Like our subconscious mind, they think of like an iceberg, where what we really are aware of is like 9 to 11% of what our brain really is. So it taps into everything. Every time I've gone has been a different experience. It really depends on like what you're going through in your life. So it's like its own version of therapy.
That is cool.
Some people, you know, really get anxious from it. For me, it's just a good release to... Just remember, I'm here to help these kids. It's really hard. I can't take on all their pain because that would just be, you know, that would break me, and my job is to be there to help them.
Right.
And then also just building the relationships with them. You know, when I graduate a client, it's sad. I'm going to miss them, but I'm proud of the progress that they've made.
Oh, that's
so great. Yoga is amazing. That's one that's just really kind of mind, body, soul helps. And another one, to be completely honest, is music. Like if I've had a rough day, there's different songs I listen to on the way home.
That's so great. Music is total medicine.
And so huge.
Right? Yeah.
And they do music therapy as well. I don't know if you've ever done that.
I haven't, but I've heard of it. And it is something I'm really interested in. Yeah.
It's definitely powerful. One artist I use just because there's not really many lyrics. Because with the lyrics, you're kind of, you know, manipulating the therapy session. Lindsay Sterling, if you haven't heard of her, definitely look her up.
Oh, I
but
will.
But it'll go through a flood of emotion, so with the kids, I'll have them do deep breathing, and we listen to the music, or
that's color, so cool.
While you're listening to the music.
And does that help open them up a little bit, too, and kind of get peaceful, calm?
Yeah, I have a really good rapport with all the kids I work with. I mean, the ones that were real hesitant at first, it was maybe a session or two. But, I mean, this is a different population. I know most people working on their hours, you know, might do a private practice or various things. These kids, I can't even imagine, you know, they tell me what they've been through, and it's just stuff that no child should have to go through. So what I focus on the most with them is obviously them being able to, like, vocalize their feelings and emotions, but really teaching them the tools to regulate their emotions.
Things they can take
because
with them
children,
for life.
Yeah, absolutely.
Make a difference. I think those are invaluable tools. I think it can make the difference of, you know, making it one more day sometimes, you know.
That
sounds like so much to carry with the children, with adults too, but I see what you mean. You think they're a child, like they're innocent. How do they, you know, how do things like that even happen?
So. And it's hard too, because they go through social workers, and I don't know that realm of the world at all. I mean, we'll write letters back and forth to them of the progress of the kids, but I'm not really sure of the role of them. But every kid I've worked with at this agency, and I'm sure everywhere else, they go through social workers so fast that they never get to connect with them.
Got it.
So I think that's another thing I have to process with them. You know, they lose their parents. They're in one foster home. Then they're in the next foster home. Like, these kids, it really comes down to resilience. Is, I don't know how they do it, but they do.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Like, they really become strong kids. They deal with issues. Some of the foster homes are more like group homes. Once you hit about 9 years old, eight or nine, I think that's when they start doing the group homes. And those are kids that have been in the system for a while.
And what
is that? I have a
lot
of clients that I ask them, do you remember living with your parents? And they don't.
Like, okay.
They've been in
groups.
Some kind of a foster care. Yeah.
Okay. And is a group home, to walk us through that, is that like a building, a shared building, dormitory style? Is that?
They do have those. Those are more like the really, really negative behavior, kind of, they can't stay in a home.
Okay.
Oddly enough, you'd be driving down the street and you'd never know that next door could be a group home.
Got
it's
it.
Just a normal home.
Residential looking.
Licensed people come in.
Okay.
And it's either all girls or all boys. They don't mix.
Okay.
For various reasons, of course.
Sure.
But about like 5 to 8 kids per house.
Okay, wow.
Yeah, so you just think of all those kids going through all those
different issues,
experiences all together.
Sure. Yeah. Wow, that's a lot. And, you know, is that what you're doing now? You're going to these?
No, I don't go into the home.
Okay,
no.
Got it. So
they come
to you.
To the office for us.
Okay.
And then I'm actually going to be on Tuesday switching into a new role that's a wraparound department. And that's just going to be more intense. There's 4 therapists on the team. One works directly with the child, one works with the family, one works with the siblings, and one works with the parent.
Oh.
So these are open DCFS cases. Like, you know, could they, the neighbor called because, you know, the kid's arm's broken or something. So it's just, it's more intense. A lot of domestic violence. Mm-hmm. You work as a team just for, like, safety factors. So that's going to be interesting.
Mm.
So currently I was working in the office. Now I'm going to be going into the field.
Wow.
Which puts us at a vulnerable spot.
Sure.
You know, we don't know what we're going into.
What you're getting into, what you're going to be seeing, what kind of behavior is going to be happening. Wow. You are like my hero, for real, Becky. That's amazing.
I mean, I think about the foster parents, and I just think that realm, too, like what they're doing for those kids, I think is awesome. And really, anybody in the world that thinks outside of themselves is a hero.
If Becky ruled the world, okay, if Becky ruled the world,
okay.
And there was one thing you were requiring everybody to do to benefit mental health and make the world better from your experience and what you do, your daily life, what would that one requirement be everyone do to make the world better and to make mental health healthier, more stable?
As far as the mental health, I would say just being open to it, not thinking that because someone sees a therapist, they're weak or there's something wrong with them. Just being open to the process and with the world, really just...
What do you see that we need more
realizing of? That everybody's been through something, you know, if everybody just judged a little bit less and, you know, really opened up. I went to a Starbucks one day and the lady asked, you know, how are you doing? And it was just that they, you know, I had a client end up in the hospital, luckily make it, but try to commit suicide.
Oh,
and I just broke down crying because the lady in the drive-thru asked me how I was doing.
Sure.
So just being compassionate to others' feelings would, I think, make a huge difference.
That, yeah, empathy, compassion, that's so beautiful. Mm-hmm. And I think it is so much what our world needs more of all the time. That's awesome.
And also just being open, like, I know we've discussed it before, but 211 from any cell phone.
Yes, yeah.
You can call. I mean, to me, that's a huge resource, just helping other people. People reach out to me, and I'm completely open to that.
What
if
is
I can't
this
help them,
221?
I send them to 211.
Or 211. Okay, so 211.
It's a, yeah, a live person will talk to you. It could be anything in the world, like mental health wise, and they'll just go through a computer screen where you are, what your situation is. I don't know how they do it, but it's all of the programs that are out there.
Wow.
But just a really good way, you know,
sure,
when you don't know what you need, to find what would be best.
So if you call 211, basically you'll get a live person, and they'll...
Yeah, from a cell phone.
From a cell phone. That's great, and that is a great resource. I'm sure they've saved many lives.
Oh, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. And
yeah,
gotten
people are
through.
Great.
Right. Now, who do you call when there's nobody, or sometimes it feels like there's no one?
Yeah, and I think that's the part, too, nowadays with kids. You know, it's just on social media, trying to cut each other down. Like, that's how a lot of my clients are.
Do you hear that feedback?
All those people, it all comes down to, you know, being insecure as opposed to lending a hand.
Mm-hmm. Do you think social media has kind of fueled that in a way?
Personally, I do, yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of the kids I've worked with, you know, have self-esteem issues, cutting issues. When I was in high school, you know, I think it's like AOL, but...
Sure, yeah.
If you made a mistake or you did something and someone captured a picture of it, it wasn't blasted everywhere.
True.
For everybody to make fun of. I do think social media with kids is very tricky. A lot of the kids I work with have been molested. There's people on the internet even looking at people's Facebook pictures, you know, of families and looking at children inappropriately.
Sure.
I think it's, you know, social media really, there's benefits of it, of course, but I think it really has changed people in general and how they think and how they treat others. It's easy to be mean over a computer screen.
Oh, totally. Yeah, you're not really face-to-face having to be confronted. It seems like it definitely could open up, you know, a platform for, like, bullying or, you know, more of that type of thing just because you're not in front of somebody.
Yeah. Even, you know, the kids I work with, they said that when they go on social media and they see all these pictures of people with their families for Christmas, you know, something that's a good, positive post, they take it as it hurts them because they don't have that. So it's just, you never know how someone's going to take things on social media, but just, you know, they know they, you know, people should be able to post those kinds of pictures. But I had a couple clients comment how sad it made them to just be scrolling through those days looking at family upon family upon family together when they didn't have that.
Right. And how heartbreaking, like, that is. I think it's possibly, and I don't know what you think, but like a lack of maybe awareness or compassion that we had mentioned before, when people are kind of posting, I don't want to say recklessly, but kind of, right? Whether it's like all the stuff they have and how great life is, or the people that are, you know, posting the bad stuff. And then you have people who are like in disguise checking out your really personal information or your family or your children, or, you know, just that you don't want to be advertising.
And it's like that one quote I've seen that's like, I can't remember, I'm going to probably botch it, but something like, I hope your life is as happy as it looks on Facebook or something. A lot of times people put on this whole facade, you know, that everything's perfect. And
sure. And
I just think social media is a way, I don't know, it's interesting.
It is. And it's coming from somebody that does your kind of work. Like, I feel like you see behind the curtain more than most, because people are very, I'm sure, typically like vulnerable and raw with you. So you're seeing like what's behind the facade. I feel like our culture could definitely use a little bit more discernment, maybe, with what they're putting out there. I don't know. In the world we live in today,
yeah.
There are, you know, children who are starving and children with no parents and people that, you know, have a ton of stuff, which is great. Like, that's not knocking them for that, but it's just finding balance. And I think just being a little bit, again, more aware of everybody that's in our world.
Like you said, I mean, really even giving back, like,
yeah,
even the people that have a ton of stuff, you know, like, I grew up in a fortunate family, but my parents taught us from a very, very early age. And I think that's kind of like where I connected with psychology, like, the first place. I don't know if my parents taught it or I had it, but just empathy.
Right.
And it doesn't seem like that many kids are taught that. To think of other people, to think about how that, you know, if you teach that from the ages of like 2 or 3, I think that's in the kid forever.
I agree. And yeah, why is there such a lack of that? That's still such a question I have that I'm so passionate about, that really, and I'm sure you see it all the time, like, you know, why aren't we all just a bunch of like these full of empathy creatures, you know, like,
mm-hmm.
Why is it because we've been hurt and we don't know, we never learned, we've been hurt. Even the people that have learned and know the difference. And I mean, you know, are we born with that? Is it, you know, there's just, I have so many questions I feel like that would be the answer to if we were all, you know, had more empathy towards one another.
And that's like where the inner child work for me comes in, is you go back to that moment in time to try to figure out what shaped it.
Got it.
Like, I knew from a very young age, I was 3, we were in Hawaii with another family for Thanksgiving. Kind of remember it, it's more my mom's story, but I remember bits and pieces, but I broke down in tears, you know, a little girl, 3 years old, and at the Sheraton eating shrimp cocktail, shouldn't be crying. And it took my parents a while to calm me down. And then finally when they did, they said, what is wrong? And I, you know, I was 3. I said, it's the age you start learning things, you know, well, Thanksgiving's for your family. And still to this day, it breaks my heart. But there was this elderly lady eating alone. And even at 3, when I was just starting to understand what Thanksgiving meant, I knew that that wasn't right for her to be sitting alone without the family, without being thankful, all of that.
Aww.
So it's kind of just like from an early age.
Isn't that
other
amazing?
People's feelings mattered, you know?
That early, though. 3 years old.
And that's when your personalities, you know, by 2, 3, and 4 are already formed.
Stamped in. That amazes me. And,
yeah.
Oh, you know what, Becky? We're going to pause for just a moment.
Ew.
So, what propelled you into choosing this career path, this choice?
I actually kind of fought this career choice.
Interesting.
In high school, I was not very academic. I just, you know, didn't really put too much effort into it. It wasn't that I wasn't smart, but the only class I can say that I ever read the book for fun was psychology in like 8th or 9th grade. Read the whole book a million times. It just fascinated me. It kind of found me.
Wow.
And I tried, you know, different things along the way, but it was what I always came back to. And just the power of therapy. I had an ex who had cystic fibrosis, and it's a genetic disease, but he was never open to therapy, was never open to ever the possibilities of getting double lung transplant. It was just, that's how it was. Somehow, and I don't know how, maybe he just came to terms with his health himself, but he started seeing a therapist, and it really, like, I could see just a change in him, a change in the way that he viewed himself, a change in the way he viewed others, just how powerful it was. And I was already going to school during that time, but that just really, really, really pushed me.
Nice.
And then I got to know, after he passed away, I got to know his therapist pretty well. And she just, oh my gosh, like, you want to talk about a hero? Like,
wow.
This lady is just amazing, and the impact that she could have on someone. You know, since I could remember, I genuinely care about people. I really can't think of another career that would have suited me. Like, it just kind of,
you do
always
really
felt
care
right.
About people. You're so passionate about what you do, and that's, you know, a big reason why I wanted to have you on the show. But you just have this this deep place for wanting to give and care for people. I'm sorry about your ex. Did that, as far as shape any part of your career, or how has that impacted? Did you go into therapy yourself after that? Were you in therapy before?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
No, yeah, that was a lot of therapy. Grief in general is
right.
A lot.
Yes.
When I was at the rehab, I created my own group. It was grief and loss, because I noticed a pattern in a lot of the guys that, and it was a male and female facility, but majority was men, but a lot of them, like, when you work with someone in addiction, and addiction's a whole different realm.
Right.
You have to figure out the reason why they use. Like, the physical dependency part's there, but the underlying reason is some emotional issue that's going on. So a lot of them, I realized, was, you know, my grandma died, my mom died, my brother died, and that's what got them in it. So
connected,
I started this grief and loss group where,
wow.
To this day, I don't know if those guys got more out of it or I did. You know, it was just,
wow.
When you're talking about that and being vulnerable with people about grief and loss in general is such a different part of therapy. A breakup is a loss.
Sure.
You know, you have to grieve that relationship. There's so many parts in the world, but if you don't process that and heal from it, I've seen it, you know, just carry on the people their entire adult life. I mean, it definitely affected me. And one thing, like, I have a ton of grief quotes that I, you know, tell myself all the time. It doesn't go away. People say, oh, in time you'll feel better. Like, you don't.
Mm-hmm.
But it's as time goes on, you can accept it more, see it from a different point of view. I actually wanted to do my internship with his old therapist.
Oh, wow.
And it just didn't work out with my school. They wanted her to take on a couple of other people. But I realized at that point in my career, where I was, you know, brand fresh out of grad school, would have been way too soon for me to be taking on other, because she works with children and their families with terminal illnesses.
Okay.
So long term, after probably like 5-10 years after being licensed, then I would like to get into that.
That is what you're
ultimate. But I think even for, yeah, for now it would just be too much even.
Right. You know, grief is something that, like you said, it could be, you know, a literal, you know, passing of someone, or a bad breakup or, you know, something like that. It's perplexing to me why our culture as a whole doesn't just like have grief powwows all the time. Like, cause I feel half the healing, right, is talking about it. And so many people, I feel like it's unfortunately connected to like a shame. There's like a shame, even if it's not their fault, they feel like less than because they've lost someone or something important to them. And that breaks my heart. Cause I wish there was a magic way we could just take that away. So they would all just freely talk about it. And then I think people could kind of expedite their healing and knowing like they're not alone. And almost every single person walking this earth has gone through grief of some sort.
Mm-hmm. And the hard part too is there's 5 stages of grief. Mm. They don't go in order. It's not like, okay, I've made it to the 3rd one. Like, I'm working through it. I can do this.
Right.
You know, it goes back and forth and up and down. And
do you still find days you're working through it yourself?
Yeah, there's certain times I realized, and this was the first year of my life that I knew it well enough. I think I've just done enough kind of self-actualization. The anniversary of him passing and his birthday, I've just learned to take the day off work.
Good for you.
Just take a personal day.
Be good to
and
yourself
more than that,
and do
it's
that.
Just,
that's great.
I've learned, you know, flip that coin. Instead of sitting there miserable, I try to do something, and I told all my clients that at the rehab too, try to do something to celebrate that person's life.
I like that, flipping that coin.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
So that's what it's about. That's, you know,
yeah.
You're going to have the horrible, the sadness, the anger, all of that. But if you can take the time to focus on celebrating having that person in your life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my mom asked me after Mike passed, she said, would it have been better if you hadn't met him? And I said, absolutely not. You know, so knowing that having that person be impactful, it should. I mean, there's, I wish I like remembered it word for word, but there's a post that from Kubler-Ross where it talks about, of course, it's going to hurt. It should hurt, like that person had an impact on your life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's beautiful, and grief, everybody's gone through it. I don't think a single person on the planet, you know, whether you lost a pet or.
Right. There is that quote, better to have loved and lost than never loved at all.
Absolutely.
Goes something like that. And I think it's embracing that love. We're going to be getting ready to wrap it up, but I have one more question for you. And it's, what is the hardest thing about your job? And what is the best thing about your job? The hardest first.
The hardest for my job currently is when it's not even the job itself, which I think a lot of people think it is. It's when a kid is taken out of whatever foster home they're in and put in another one, and I don't get to say bye. I don't get to terminate with them. It happens a lot. Yeah, so it's either, I mean, it's just there's not that many foster families out there. It could be the kid has an issue with something. It could be their biological parent is in San Diego, so they try to move them closer. I mean, these kids get bounced around left and right.
Mm.
Like I most 8-year-olds have probably been, you know, in like 3 different homes.
Oh my God.
So that's I had a little one I worked with, she was 11, like if I could have like taken her home and fostered her myself, I would have.
You would have. I know you would have too. God.
Oh. Yeah, I went to session one day and she wasn't there. I think that's the hardest, and the best part is just seeing improvements in these kids, you know, seeing kids go from coming crying every session to genuinely happy, or kids being, you know, a lot of kids, their sadness comes out as anger. So seeing kids just, you know, very aggressive behaviors, just seeing any improvement, knowing, you know, it's not a matter of like, okay, I help this kid. It's like, this is awesome. Like, the kids made progress.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and to me, that's what it's about. There's no other reason. Like, yeah, going to school, getting a paycheck, whatever, but just seeing someone blossom and kind of come into their own, become more positive, that's what it's about.
And ultimately, that's your goal, is to end up working with children, terminally ill children? Is that?
I really, really like the rehabs, to be completely honest.
Yeah.
I would definitely get back into that. But
and that was with adults?
Long-term goal is to work with kids and families with terminal illnesses, but every single mentor I've ever had tells me that what you plan to do with it, it takes you a whole different route.
Oh.
So I've already accepted that I'm just, you know, a lot of people want to do a private practice and then end up, every teacher I had would go and tell their story of, you know, how the career took them.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just going to be open to where my heart takes me, like, in this journey.
Oh, that's so beautiful. Practicing what you preach, being open. And Becky, you are such a blessing to the world and so many people, how you do your work with those in addiction, children who we can't even imagine. I'm sure I can't even imagine some of the terrible things that they've had to live through. The nightmares you may have about it. The things that you probably feel your hands are tied some days, but you've done the best you can and see that improvement or that turn of joy come across their face. And yeah, thank you so much for everything you do, and that is why you're an everyday hero and you are on our show. So
I was honored when you asked me. I don't think of myself like that, but
you are,
you know, at the same point, I think I'm gonna find someone in my life today and tell them. No, I think we all know heroes and
definitely
should tell people. So thank you. I really, really am blessed that you asked me.
You truly are. And whoever you end up helping into this coming week and for, you know, the rest of your journey, they are so lucky and in good hands. And really, I know they're going to be very grateful to have you in their corner and there for them. So thank you for everything you do daily, and yeah, thanks for being a hero.
Well, thank you for making this podcast. I'm definitely going to follow it.
Oh, yay. Well, thank you. Have a great rest of your day, and thanks for taking the time to talk about what you do and shine some light on what, you know, what really goes on in your daily life and, you know, the victories and the not so great times too about it, but all of it. Thank you.
Definitely. Thank you.
All right. Well, we will talk to you later.
Okay. Sounds good.
Bye. Thank you again, Becky, for being on the show, and thank you for listening to our show. This is Lorraine signing off with Everyday Heroes, and I look forward to bringing you our next hero in a couple of weeks.